Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of the values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Light the fuse.
Well, this is not mission difficult, Mr. Hunt. It's mission impossible. Difficult should be a walk in the park for you.
It's all got to do with the rabbit's foot.
Please don't make me go through you.
Sir, Hunt is the living manifestation of destiny, and he has made you his mission.
Kittredge, you've never seen me very upset.
And you really think we can do this?
We're going to do it.
Welcome, 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 boys and girls, to Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast. I am Drew Taylor, joined by Charles Hood. We are your ringleaders for the circus of Mission Impossible. Charles, how you feeling?
I feel awesome. I feel like we're on a roll. We got great guests every week. It's just been a blast.
It has been a blast. It's been a blast doing it with you, you know?
Yes. It's always a joy to sit across from you virtually over Zoom. And do this show.
Truly a thrill. And we are really thrilled to bring back one of our favorite guests from the old show. Charles, did you look into when the last time we spoke to James was?
Yes. We spoke to James Mather about a year ago. We talked to him in January 2023 about Top Gun Maverick. And then after we spoke to him, the man won an Oscar for his work on the movie. Just saying.
Which we did not congratulate him at all in this interview.
Yeah, we didn't congratulate him. I mean, we sent him an email at the time. Look, we did our part, okay?
That's true.
He can back off, as far as I'm concerned.
That's true. I think we also need to set up what we're talking about with him initially, which is our dogs being in the movie.
Well, we should say, well, James Mather also, we should say, is a sound genius. I mean, what is his exact credit? Is he a re-recording mixer? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And then sound designer as well, maybe. It is a huge part of filmmaking. It's like half of the movie, and people don't really give it enough credit for how much goes into this. He's a supervising sound editor on Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. And yeah, it's a lot. Doing the work, creating those. I mean, a lot of times there's not a lot of usable sound from production, from the set. And you got to create a whole soundscape. So it's a big job.
Especially in England when you record things and there's somebody going, "Oi, what's all this?"
There's a lot of audio cleanup of guys in the background going, "Oi." Yeah. You know, there's a lot of,
when's tea time? You know, you got to really
There's a lot of like soccer hooligans walking by the set that you have to remove that sound in the background and then put like a good background soundtrack back in there. You know, so it's very important. And he very deservedly won the Oscar for Top Gun Maverick, which obviously we talked to him last year. And it's a great episode. You can check that out on our website, lightthefusepodcast.com. In the episode guide, you can see all of our old episodes from the old show. And you can find our original chat with James. But that was Top Gun Maverick. This is Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1. And yes, I'm sorry. Context about the dogs. I'm sorry, Drew. I cut you off on that. We got to talk about the dogs.
It's fine. I'm glad you gave that ramp up because basically we had started, I don't know if pressure is the right word, but we were trying to get our dogs into Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. They were in there for a bit. They might still be in there in the midst of the train calamities, but I think that they were taken out. They were too distracting. So we really get on his case about it in this opening.
That was a secret mission we had going for a while. I don't think we said it in the episode last time that we spoke with him. But afterwards, it came up in our conversation on email. And then I spent some good time getting a really good recording of my dog Rusty howling. I don't know about you, but I put a lot of effort into it. I wanted to make it really sound good.
Yeah, I mean, I went through several takes with my dog. I said, "Can do it better, do it better." And she finally did so, but it wasn't good enough.
You were reaching like Kubrick levels of perfectionism with Nova.
Yes.
You know, just driving her to insanity to make sure to get that take the best that it can be.
Yeah, but ultimately wasn't good enough. But hopefully, maybe in movie 8, they will be there. There are dogs yes. there, as you bring up. We met a dog on set. I think we can say that.
Yeah, let's get the dogs in the next one. So yeah, let's keep up the pressure or whatever that word is. That it wasn't pressure. Maybe it was whatever word is beyond pressure into a step into annoying. Maybe intimidation's good too. Yeah, we intimidated, yeah. pressured,
cajoled,
annoyed,
bribed. Cajoled.
Yeah, yeah. Bribed is a good one. Yes. Yeah. So we got to get the dogs in there. Anyway, yeah, look. You don't want to hear from us anymore, I'm sure. We've been babbling on long enough.
Well, can I add one more thing, Charles?
Of course.
I just want to say that if you want to hear James's amazing work, you can buy or rent Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning across digital platforms. And you can also pick it up in DVD, Blu-ray, or 4K Ultra HD format, which you and I, Charles, have the 4K and we love it.
Yes. Crank up the sound.
Crank up that sound. And you can also watch the first 6 movies that are streaming right now on Paramount Plus. So James worked on Rogue Nation and Fallout as well, right?
Yes.
Okay. So you can hear all of his amazing work. But yeah.
Yeah, we talked about that with him last time, and we talked about Top Gun Maverick. This time it's all Dead Reckoning, baby.
There we go. Let's get into it. Well, James, it's so great to have you on. I think we really first need to get into why the dogs did not make the movie, and
no.
if they will be represented in part 8. I mean, that's really what we're really interested in.
So the dog story: they came on, they barked, they then got hit by the car as Ethan got done in the alleyway, and they never returned. They were part of a wreckage that happened off screen. And
was that the scene that didn't make the movie that they reshot?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So it was like originally how Ethan got the mission. Right. And then
that's right.
That. Okay. So, yeah. So we were a casualty of being a deleted scene or a reshot scene.
You were in there, man. You were the cause of a car crash. It was a big deal. So sorry. So I had it in the background. I had it in the background when the guy comes in with the delivery bag.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, I thought sweet spot. No, just quiet. Then I had it on the. I mean, there are a few elements, but you'd never hear them. I could do a special segue where they're uncoupling the carriages. And yes. they're twisting the thing, and it goes. And there's, I could do you a reduction until you just got the dog sound, which is the weirdest sound.
Yo, my dog Rusty has that howl. I remember you said that you yeah. try to use it for part of the train screeching or something.
I really did. And now I've got McHugh in my case saying, "Well, why don't you put my dogs in there? I've got funky sounding dogs." And I'm like,
"Hey, the more dogs, the merrier."
That's right.
I said, if you shoot a scene where there's dogs, we'll get them in, McHugh. I promise you. But I have them still. So, you know, there's always the next installation.
Okay.
They haven't been forgotten.
Okay.
They haven't been forgotten. They just, like everything in these movies, they have to find their place.
That's right.
We saw some dogs on Instagram on set of 8 for maybe, I don't know if they were sled dogs or something.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. Yeah. But we saw from some of the actors' Instagrams. So, hey, hopefully those dogs are in the movie. And if they are, whoo boy, we're going to be real excited.
Yeah. They'll be the strangest sounding huskies ever filmed.
my dog is 53% husky.
Oh, okay. They'll be perfect.
He's got the husky howl.
Perfect.
David Attenborough won't be able to tell the difference.
People really who are tuning in for the Mission Impossible podcast are absolutely riveted. By this.
Sorry, everybody. Sorry, we've gone down a rabbit hole.
We're gonna just do a full hour on the dogs.
Yes.
Well, they'll hear them one day, and then they'll understand.
Yeah. I mean, from a sound perspective, obviously, Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning has everything. I mean, where do you start on something of this scale?
Oh, one step at a time. It was an. The project was incredible. It was exceptional because obviously all the restrictions that were had due to COVID, and everyone's talked about that, and everyone's talked about the fact that it went on over a period of much longer than anybody expected it to. And so there were a couple of scenes that were done early days. The chase in Rome, car chase in Rome was a really early, that was some of the first stuff they shot. And so we had that for quite a long time and we played a lot with it. And we got it into a state where that reel was kind of CinemaCon ready to show at the event. And it sat pretty like that for most of the duration of the gestation of the film. And then the storm scene came in, and that was really exciting because it was a completely different palette of sounds. I mean, we always knew the opening was going to be very quiet, very singular and sort of detailed and specific. And then it turns into, you know, this extraordinary elemental thing, which when we discussed it, you know, I remembered being really blown away by the opening scene in Close Encounters when they all rock up to the desert and there's that storm and they find the old planes from the war that hadn't been seen. And that storm, I watched it again and it was still really, really, it's so beautifully done. And that was a really strong inspiration for that desert storm. And that was a longer scene. The train just kept growing and growing and growing throughout the whole process. There were so many elements, there so many layers to the onion, you know, that I had a faulty soundbar, which I recorded one evening way early on because the sound was weird, digital, glitching, kind of, it was clearly something trying to get through, but it wasn't, it was being so distorted you couldn't make out what it was. And I recorded that with my phone at the time just to, you know, see if one day it might come in handy. And that was probably one of the last sounds we actually embedded into the soundtrack because the general vibe was that the entity was such a strong character that it kind of needed its own signature that wasn't necessarily a music theme. I mean, the one thing about this movie, there's a lot of characters in it. The cast is really broad. So, you know, adding another musical theme to that wasn't necessarily the way to go. And this entity sound that came up, another whole level, another whole strata of sound design and expression and storytelling. So I think when something goes on for longer than usual, you just have more time to consider and to craft. And there was so much craft in that movie. I mean, I rarely get the opportunity to dive in with the filmmakers and with the other departments, you know, the guys that do the construction and the DOPs. And we were talking at one point about the carriage when Grace and Ethan are clambering up and they're pulling their way up, and it's quite late in that incredible scene. And I was like, you know, the construction guy was like, yeah, we built a whole carriage, you know, we had carriages properly constructed and we were hanging it, and the Chunky, the camera op, was hanging down on a harness upside down, filming close up with Ethan and Grace. So they got the vein popping and sweat, and there's a sound recordist in there getting the dust. And I suddenly realized, it dawned on me that the expanse of work that goes into these movies from that point all the way through to a foot squashing a lemon in the chase through the kitchen, in the scramble through the kitchen.
Right.
It's intense, really intense.
Yeah.
And actually our job ended up being much more about taking away or redefining. So the storm scene reduced from like 9 minutes down to 4. And by the time we got to 4 minutes, all the sounds that were in that scene had a different energy flow. So the description that they started off doing needed to be more succinct and tighter. Same sounds in many places, but they needed to have that very abbreviated texture and quality to them. So we kind of rebuilt that very late on, but we knew what the ingredients were. And actually the scene in the tunnel when they're on the roof of the train and they're fighting, and I wanted that to be the most claustrophobic and uncomfortable ambience that we could make it. And it was through creating that that the Storm got more of its identity, because the Storm now had this, had to have a similar sense of jeopardy and intensity. So quite often when you're doing a production, you kind of get through something onto the next to the end, and then you're done and it's finished. Whereas this, we could kind of do something and then go, oh, let's do that there as well. Let's go back. I mean, we sat with McHugh for a couple of days and worked the Storm scene very late on, as we did with the Entity. And it was a luxury. It was really, and it was necessary because, like you said, there's a lot going on.
We'll be back with more from James Mather after the break.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game, headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Yeah, I mean, with the Entity, especially in that opening scene when you don't really, you're not really sure what it is, you have to come up with a sound that is, that conveys menace,
yeah,
right? Without any kind of exposition of what it actually is. So I was wondering specifically for that, you know, submarine sequence, how you went about designing that and how that Entity sound kind of factored in.
The first scene where the Entity took its place in the movie was at the nightclub. Because the feeling was that if Ethan is responding to something that is apparently visual and the lights are doing their crazy things, but there needed to be something else that was sparking it. So that is where the Entity landed and became unacceptable and approved and kind of, yeah, that's cool. That's going to work. And then it kind of proliferated throughout the soundtrack. And we, you know, then McHugh said, why don't we have it? Let's have it so that we get a tingle of the Entity at the beginning, so that the audience may not even recognize it, but as it grows throughout, the audience realizes that there is a continuity and a thread of storyline with that one sound. And obviously those that have seen the movie and stayed right through to the end will have had that little Easter egg of Entity sound at the very, very last sound of the end roller. And it's like, there's a great film called Them, 1950s, about ants that get nucleared and turn into giant ants. And they had this incredible sound that they used that was this kind of serrating, really intimidating sound. Very simple, very, very simple. And it spurred a kind of reaction of fear and panic. And this, for me, this Entity sound was a bit like the modern version of that. When you're sitting at home, and your technology goes wrong, or sometimes you can have it on a call on your phone, the sound is like, where's that coming from? It's kind of going through some weird, I would like to say algorithm, I'd like to say Entity, who knows what it is. But when your digital gear goes wrong, you get weirdness that you think, no, it's not working, shit, I can't. And it's kind of a modern day frustration for people. It's like, you know, you hear the sound coming through your telly and you know something's wrong, you're not going to be able to hear. And people have an aversion to things not working properly. It's that kind of, we spend a lot of money on gadgets, and if they don't work properly, it creates a frustration. And that, along with the frequency range that it was hitting, which hurts your ears if you listen to it really closely, you know, it's not warm, it's not low frequency, it's getting into your head. So it seemed it was a complete fluke. You know, this sound wasn't, I'd love to say that I spent hours and nights thinking about it, and it was just an emotive sound that seemed absolutely right to put forward as an option. And you know, the music was getting a lot of attention, and it was taking shape in a beautiful way, and that seemed to be counter the music. So McHugh felt that worked really well, and it was, we then had to do a lot of work to try and make it an effect that we could manipulate and manufacture so that we could treat Benji's voice when they're running through the streets in Venice. To emphasize that the entity is now taking over from Benji's instructions. It took a while, you know, there's a lot of oscillation and various EQ sweeps and stuff to try and manipulate it. But I think the guys did a terrific, the sound design team did a great job in getting it to work. And now we have to use it all the time.
Yeah, it's very creepy.
Yeah.
You mentioned it quickly, and we've heard McCory tell the story, but I wanted to hear the full story from you. What was the stereo that was glitching, and what were you listening? Was it a song or something? That
no.
Tell the story of how you found the entity sound.
I got a phone call. So my daughter phoned me up and said, Dad, the TV's broken. I can't hear anything. It's rubbish. You know. So I take that. Okay, I'll have a look when I get home. I get home, I put a sound bar on, and I play the telly, and it is the entity sound. And it's like, oh, that's really annoying. I have no idea what that is. And this is an HDMI cable coming out of the telly into the bar, so it should be. It's digital.
Had you started on the movie at this point, or was this like long before the movie even happened?
This was at the very beginning. This was early doors, yeah. We'd started, but obviously we started, stopped because of the COVID. So it's 2020, I think, that I recorded it. And I thought, I'll record it, but I should record, if I'm going to record it for the movie, because it's the movie that it's going to get used in, if anything, I'll play back Rogue Nation. I'll just play the opening titles of Rogue Nation and record that. So I did that music. Great. Oh, it's good with music. And I thought I should get some dialogue just to see how it responds with dialogue. Did that from Rogue Nation. I think I used the scene. I had a collection of scenes for reference, and I used the bike chase in, not Rogue Nation.
Fallout.
Thank you. And so I tried different scenes and just recorded them because I thought, well, if I'm going to use them in a Mission Impossible movie, I kind of need to see use something that I can, you know, I can use. It's owned by the franchise. But I hadn't, there was no obvious visual reference that it would tie itself to until much later on. And the entity had many iterations before it settled on what it finally became. And it was only then it was the sort of circular, you know, visual effect on the computers, but it was also the light booms in the nightclub. And that was like throwing that in gave us a distortion, which we didn't have to play a sound through anything to get that distortion. We could just put the entity on top and it gave that impression. It's funny, you know, serendipity and pure luck. And I always think that when you're being creative, I always think that when you're on a project that's going to be involved and complicated and have many aspects to it, things crop up and you've got to be open to it. You've got to kind of, it's always really important to be open to the creativity around you and the things that happen around you and seize that moment, whether you know what it's for or not, but to have that flexibility and open-mindedness and not trying that, you can't always control everything. Sometimes things come to you and you just say, thank you, I'll take that. I don't know what I'll do with it. But
did your kid ever walk in the room
I fixed it.
Are you gonna fix this thing or what?
No, I had to fix it obviously after that. I fixed it, and it's never done it again. So okay. I'm so glad I recorded it because it's never done it again.
So you recorded that in 2020. When did it make its way onto the...
The fourth week before Printmaster. So when did we finish this year? Yeah.
So like this year, it was 2023
this year.
When I made it in. Wow.
Yeah. It was a really late addition. And it was, like I said, it's one of those things, you just know it's there, you don't know what it's for. It's like when you go traveling and you find a spice that you've never tasted before, or you find something, it sounds like those things that you go, that's weird, that's a crazy sound. The washing machine's broken, it's lost a nut, and the drum is slamming the side, and it's this, it really, and you think, well, that's like something out of Mad Max, that's crazy. You record it. You record it before you fix it.
Wow.
Yeah, we were lucky with that.
Expanding more on, like, the Drew mentioned the submarine. You know, submarines are a fun opportunity to do, you know, sounds. Were there inspirations for that for you, or any fun Easter eggs of nods to other submarine movies or anything you were throwing in there?
Oh, I'm sure there are. I'm sure McHugh had a whole gamut of them. There was what was really interesting with that was the language of sonar, and, you know, talking to the experts, the military experts who knew what the sonars were that were being introduced throughout while the whole cat and mouse was going on. And again, visual effects really kind of brought that to life. And we tried to tell a story using classic sonar sounds, but they're quite simple, you know, and they have there's a decay, and then there's a beep, and then there's a respond. And sometimes the simplicity of it is terrific, but it's not very exciting. So we spent a lot of time trying to create multiple different sonars doing different things to emphasize whether it's scanning it and seeing it as a blop, blop, as opposed to beep, beep. And as much as it was very helpful, it just got a little bit busy and a little bit cluttered. So when it goes into silent mode, you don't realize that you've had this very heavy atmosphere within the submarine itself. And then that kind of the motor hum and everything that you feel rather than hear all drops, and you go, oh wow, okay. And then the sonars can have a little bit more dynamic space to play. And as the visual effects came in, we realized we only really need to hear what we see. They don't need to keep going on afterwards. Like if we go to one of the other characters talking, we don't necessarily need to hear it unless it's relative to what's about to happen. So the three-dimensional story that was being played out with the characters and the on-screen action was very subtly enhanced with the kind of reality of the sounds. And then the build-up, it's quite interesting. You know, you start the build-up of the missile going to hit the submarine, and you kind of go, well, it's getting closer. So logistically, the ping and the repeat get closer and closer together and faster, because that's... And we tried that, and it's like, yeah, it's kind of... It's just a faster ping. It's just, and then one of the guys said, "Well, I'm just going to do an ascending rise. I'm not going to change the speed of the beeps, but I'm just going to make it go higher and higher and higher." And it's something we played with on Top Gun with the Shepherds.
Higher in volume or higher in pitch? Or
in pitch, yeah, it's ascending in pitch.
In pitch, okay.
And increasing in volume a little bit as well. But the main thing was that it was like a shepherd's tone. It was kind of building up in, and that building up in pitch heightens your nervous system. Your I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's sympathetic or parasympathetic, but I don't know. But the rise in pitch makes you feel more anxious, and so that really helped tell the story without getting faster and faster and becoming a bit like, ugh. And there were moments like that throughout the whole submarine until it really gets, I mean, it was like start tiny, 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 and then just let it become this massive, you know, you want to feel the groans and the weight of that. There's something about the vulnerability of a submarine when you realize it's doomed and it's, there's nothing you can do. It's terrifying. It's buried alive. You know, it's all the things that we fear. And this thing is just plummeting down. So we had a lot of fun. Very much towards the latter stage of the dub when the visuals were in and the pacing felt like it was now at a point where it was just, I mean, Eddie talks about, you know, every frame has to be, you know, just considered and justified. And so that has a knock on to us. So we have to go through that same meticulous timing process, timing, pitch, frequency, dynamic, you know.
We'll be back with more from sound genius James Mather after the break.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
The other amazing thing about how much this movie is how much dialogue there is. And I imagine something like the Community sequence requires just as much planning and craftsmanship and everything. So I was wondering, you know, how you figure something like that out. Is it just as complicated as a submarine sequence?
Sorry, say which scene were you talking about?
The Community, all of the agents in the room.
Yes.
Okay. Please talk about that.
That's where Eddie's editing comes into its own in an incredible way. You've got this, it's like if it was a monologue, you'd be following it word for word, you'd be invested in it. But when you have other people starting to interact and the dialogue moves swiftly from one to the other, and it's all essential information, it's all, you know, it's like the airport scene is no dialogue, but you're following it all the way through as though it were. It's kind of action being dialogue. And then when you've got the scenes with the interaction with everybody discussing what they're going to be doing, the emotional tilt of concern, that all the characters' strengths and weaknesses come out, and their vulnerability, their insistence. The performances are so strong and so convincing that their interactions are so well honed. I mean, there are so many moments in the movie where dialogue isn't necessary, but when it's added, it's just sublime. I remember there were some lines when Grace and Ethan are in the Fiat 500. I think it's one of the most classic, funny, action-driven, their relationship, the humor between them, the way they, and lines were being added that had been there, but now the cut kind of, it was hard to keep them in their entirety because the cut was so fast. So they'd be sliding around a corner and you'd have a line from Grace that just kept that emphasis of humor. And all the way through the movie, there's just a beautiful lightness of delivery that the characters have. And it makes, it's snappy. It's great dialogue, and it's snappy, and it's to the point. You don't get bored of what's being discussed, how long it's taking to get the point across. And that's where Eddie and the Q really, I think they, you know, Eddie's a fabulous editor. I can't say enough of that. You know, his action scenes are extraordinary, but so too are those moments of tender drama, those moments of let's just sit with these guys and listen to what they have to say. Let's see who they are at this stage in the arc of the film, of where they're going. And I think it's beguiling. I really do. It's all part of the dance that these movies take, where you feel you are having the breath taken out of your lungs, and then you're brought back into a tender moment where you can smile and enjoy that respite. And then you've got a huge emotional score from an incredibly emotional moment where, you know, there's a death that you wouldn't expect. And then you're back to this. It's just beautiful shape-shifting all the time. And so you're given this opportunity to not feel like you're on a straight road. You're on a roller coaster, and it's for us, it's a joy because we can explore and expand and contract all the elements of sound that we want to. You know, you've got the dialogue scenes and there's nothing. There's just room tone. There's no distraction of planes going by. There's no bikes going by. They're in Venice. There's only boats. They don't make much of a noise. You know, that's one of the scenes where you just think, well, what about pigeons? It's like, why? Listen to the dialogue. Listen to what they're saying. The story's being told for you in a way that you should be able to just enjoy that.
And we're back.
We're back.
I would love James Mather to add some fun sound effects to this show. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, we got to bug him about hitting up the sound effects library just to add some spice. Do you want it to be like a morning zoo type radio show with like all kinds of crazy sounds? Is that what you're hoping for?
I'm thinking more like an old timey radio program.
Oh, that would
be good. I'll be like, Charles, I'll be right back, and then you hear the like of the door opening, you know, that kind of stuff. I think that would be fun.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, let's do that. I'm all for an old timey radio play. This is only part one. We got James coming back next week. There's more amazing stuff. It was really great to hear him talk about the entity and hearing that story from him of how that sound effect came about and the journey, because it was like 3 years before it actually showed up in the actual movie.
Yeah, it was fun because we said, you know, we talked to other people and they said, oh, it's the sound guys malfunctioning, whatever. And we said, oh my God, that must be James's soundbar that was malfunctioning. So yeah, it was really great to hear him tell that story. And also, yeah, you're right. It's amazing that it came in so late.
Yeah. I don't think we talked about it here, but I'm sure we have in previous episodes that was a note from Edgar Wright. When he watched the movie, he told McCrory that just a music cue wasn't enough for the entity, that it would really, his suggestion was to add, you know, some kind of sound effect to indicate the entity is there. And it really works really well. It's so cool, that sound.
Yeah. What else, Charles?
I don't really have anything else. I just emphasizing, I mean, as you said, actually, in the interview, that the scale of the work on this movie, like there's so many different environments. It's just amazing work to be doing that. You know, there's desert, sandstorm, and submarine underwater, and all kinds of fun things, different cities. And I like the moment when, like, at the end, when Kittredge's narration is happening and Ethan's sort of like gliding through on the parachute. Just like really some really wonderful sound moments in this movie. And just I'm just here to appreciate James's work. As we do, and I'm excited for everyone to hear part two.
Yes, absolutely. We love highlighting these folks who contribute to these movies in such a big way, but maybe don't get the attention that they deserve. So, James, we got you. We got your back. Yeah. Well, before we sign off, Charles, you know I got some stuff to take care of here.
Important things that I want to hear.
Yeah, you've never heard this before, but never. I want to remind everybody that there are new episodes of Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast, appearing every Tuesday, available wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on social media, Light the Fuse Pod, on whatever social media platform you are using. And if you could like, subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you're listening, that would be a big help to us too. You know, we need more people to listen. So tell people, tell your friends, tell your coworkers.
Yes.
Your family.
Follow us on social media, wherever you do your social media.
Yeah. Just
do it. And spread the word.
Spread it.
Just do it.
And forget about it. You know, once you tell one person, then that's on them to tell another. It's like the ring. You know what I mean? You got to tell that one person and then they've got to take care of it. So
our show is just like the ring. You know, it's just like a curse. It's just infecting the population. Yep.
Yes,
yep.
Correct. And yeah, we'll be back next week with James Mather Part 2, which we're really excited to share with you guys. So come on back.
Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast, is produced by Charles Hood. That's me and Drew Taylor. Our supervising producer is Abby Smith. This episode was edited by Luke Burson with music by Kevin Blumenfeld. Original Mission Impossible themes by Lalo Schifrin. This podcast is a production of Paramount Pictures. All rights are reserved. This message will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.